T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
The Dave Sinclair Lincoln and Ford Sports Open Line continues.
KMOX is like the birthplace of sports broadcasting.
On KMOX.
Welcome to Inside Cardinals Nation on KMOX. I'm your host, Dan McLaughlin of Fox Sports Midwest. Inside Cardinals Nation is presented by White Castle. Hey, Cardinal Nation, meet Craver Nation at your nearest White Castle. My guest is Reds play-by-play man, Marty Brenneman. The Reds announcer has received the Ford C. Frick Award from the National Baseball Hall of Fame. He is a member of the National Sportscasters and Sports Writers Association Hall of Fame, the National Radio Hall of Fame, and Virginia Sports Hall of Fame. He's one of the best announcers in the history of sports. You name the sport, he's done it, and he's also had some great moments along the way.
Seaver with a pause, the check and the pitch. He bounces to first base. Dreesen has it. He goes to the bag, and Seaver's got it. Bob Seaver has pitched his first major league no-hitter, and this one belongs to the Reds. Seaver is being mobbed at first base as George Hendrick bounces a routine two-hopper to Danny Dreesen, and the 38,216 at Riverfront Stadium are standing.
Grounds one to the right side. Oh, he's hit the right there. Rose has done it again. Pete Rose drives a hard ground single by the outstretched glove of Ron Gilbert. And he has tied a record setback in 1897. Some 81 years ago by Wee Willie Keeler, who hit in 44 consecutive games. Jerry Royster coming over from shortstop to hand Rose the baseball as fireworks are being fired colorfully in the air over Atlanta Stadium. Rose being presented a bouquet of roses by one of the ball girls here at Atlanta Stadium, and Pete tipping his cap to all sectors of the stadium as he bangs a single into right field to keep the hitting streak alive at 44 in a row.
Here's a pitch, and a line drive, base hit into left center field. Here comes Gary Reedus, and Rose has tied it up. The ball gets by Dernier. Pete is heading toward third, and he's going to be in head first. How about that?
For Larkin running, pitch a swung on, hit to deep right field, down the line, home run. Deion Sanders, a three-run home run to right. Unbelievable.
Enjoy my conversation with Marty Brenneman. Marty Brenneman has been the play-by-play voice of the Cincinnati Reds since 1974, and we have a lot of young people that want to know about how to get in the business or what it's like to be a play-by-play guy. I want to start with this. Why did you get into broadcasting? And number two, when did you know that you wanted to do this?
To be honest with you, Dan, I think it was a subconscious thing. I was born and raised in Virginia, and when I was a kid back in the 50s, I came across a guy one night doing a Brooklyn Dodgers game by the name of Nat Albright. I was not a Brooklyn Dodgers fan, but I was taken by the way he handled his craft and the way he presented the broadcast, and I got to the point where I would listen to him almost without fail, and I came to find out sometime after the fact that he was recreating Brooklyn Dodger ball games. He, with the blessing of the O'Malley family, he broadcast out of a studio in Arlington, Virginia, and most of the stations that carried his game were Southern stations. Walter O'Malley felt if we had someone else and pumping Dodger games into the Southeast, that maybe that would create some interest and bring them north, or they would become longtime Brooklyn Dodger fans. And I think at that time, there was a subconscious seed planted that maybe this is what I wanted to do for a living. And I used to listen to a lot of Pirate games over KDKA when I was living in Virginia, and became big fans of Bob Prince and Jim Woods.
Sure.
Who did their game. Listen to the old Washington Senators games and the Baltimore Orioles with Chuck Thompson way back in the 50s. So I think when I consciously decided that I wanted to get into the broadcast business, this is what I wanted to do. Not necessarily baseball, but I wanted to be a play-by-play guy. I was not interested in sitting in a studio with a coat and tie on doing 6 and 11 o'clock news every night for five. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
I wanted to be a play-by-play guy. And so I pursued it, and I feel like I kind of made the right vocation decision.
Well, I would say so. And you know, so many people relate to you as the voice of the Reds. And you have to go back and look at your career and all the great moments you've called with NCAA basketball. Do you enjoy college basketball more, or football, or Major League Baseball? What is it?
I tell you, I love college basketball. I did 15 regional finals, and I did 10 or 11 Final Fours. I love college basketball. And I've told people every year when the NCAA tournament comes up, and I tell people, with all due respect to the World Series and the Super Bowl and all the rest of it, there's nothing like that. There is nothing like walking into an arena or a dome stadium with 60,000 people in there, and you've got four teams in the national semi. I think the national semifinals is the single best day every year, every calendar year in sports.
Really?
They play the two national semifinals, because I think the championship game is anticlimactic. I was a part of that. And the hair used to stand up on the back of my neck when I walk, and you got four pep bands, and you've got people going crazy. The pressure is so thick you can cut it with a knife. I truly loved it, but I reached a point where, and I guess it was age more than anything, I just was not interested in getting on and off airplanes 12 months a year.
Yeah.
I spent a lot of nights on the floor in Atlanta in the Hartsfield International Airport when I was working in the ACC and the Southeastern Conference doing television because I couldn't get home because of the weather.
Right.
And I said, the heck with this. But I would say, if I had to choose, I would choose what we do for a living. I often felt, and as a kid listening and then going to school and then getting into the business at a small radio station, that the most prestigious job you can have in our profession is doing baseball in a play-by-play mode. I don't, with all due respect to the other sports, but you can go back, and most of the great baseball announcers eventually ascended to network. You can talk about Kurt Gowdy, you can talk about Jack Buck, you can go down the line. Dick Enberg, Vin Scully, all these guys did local baseball, and
right.
They ascended to a network position. Not so much today, but we're in a different world today. But I think of all the jobs, broadcasting NFL football or NBA basketball or anything like that, this is a job that carries with it the most prestige.
Do you like radio or TV more?
Oh, I love radio.
Why?
Well, there are a number of reasons why. I don't have to wear a coat and tie. That might be number one.
Yes.
You know, I did 13 or 14 years of television here along with radio, and I never really could get into television. I think if there's a pure art form in play-by-play sports, I think it's broadcasting baseball on the radio.
There's no doubt.
Yeah. I liken doing basketball, and I'm sure it's the same true doing ice hockey, which I've never done, but it's like a wind-up toy. You turn it on at 7 o'clock or 7:30 when the ball goes up in the air or they drop the puck, and that baby runs nonstop until the game's over. If you don't know how to ad-lib, doing baseball on the radio and ad-lib intelligently, you can't do this sport. And it's amazing the number of people, and I'm sure you've had to deal with them too, that think we have the easiest job there is in the world. I've told high school coaches, I said, I'll tell you what, I'd like for you to come up, and I can make it happen. You come up to my booth, and I'm going to let you call three outs, and it may be six pitches,
right?
Or it may be 35 pitches, but I want you to call three outs, and then when you finish and you're wringing wet with perspiration, I want you to tell me how easy this is.
That's Marty Brenneman. Hey, Cardinals Nation, meet Craver Nation at your nearest White Castle. My conversation with Marty Brenneman continues in just a moment.
We're going to chase that Super Bowl.
This is the Dave Sinclair, Lincoln and Ford Sports Open Line.
1-2-3-7!
On America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
Welcome back to Inside Cardinals Nation. Hey, Cardinals Nation, meet Craver Nation at your nearest White Castle. We continue my conversation with Marty Brenneman. What is it like working with your son?
Well, you know, I don't really work with him anymore. I did quite a bit in the past when Tom was crossing over, but he's strictly radio now.
Right.
I mean, television. He doesn't do any radio at all. And the only time I got a chance the last few years to work with him was in spring training. He'd do three or four games on the radio with me. It was always a kick because we were always digging at each other. And he was born when I was so young. My first two kids were born before I graduated from the University of North Carolina, Chapel.
And you're running all over the place.
Yeah, but because I was 20 years old when Tom was born, and I was 21 when my daughter Dawn was born, we're not that far away, you know,
right.
20 years. And so it's more like two brothers, an older brother and a younger brother, and I think you know that from being around us.
Oh, yeah.
Things are said and things are done that are not in a normal relationship. And so it's the greatest thing is having him here and having my grandkids here, mm-hmm. and being 15 minutes away from seeing my grandkids and seeing them play, you know, basketball or lacrosse or run cross country or whatever it is. And that's the biggest single thing is to have him back in Cincinnati.
As you can imagine, folks that are listening to this are curious about Jack Buck and your relationship with Jack. How helpful was he? And when you think of Jack, what comes to mind?
Well, I tell you, I could sit here all day. I went in to the broadcaster's wing in 2000, and at the time I was the second youngest to go in. Vin Scully was the youngest. I was the second. And I can tell you straight up, had it not been for Jack Buck and Ernie Harwell and Vin Scully, because it was a different process then. It's not the same now. It's harder today than it was then. Had it not been for those three people, recommending me very highly, unbeknownst to me, I had no idea, and I found out after the fact, I probably would not have gotten in 2000. He was always very good to me. He always had time for me. Just like when I first came, I held guys like him and Scully and Bob Prince and Ernie Harwell and people like that in awe. I mean, why wouldn't you? I mean, these are guys that were the pillars of our business. They were the giants of the broadcast industry in baseball. And he was great with me. He and I got along famously well because being incredibly much younger than obviously I am now, been around for 44 years, when they talked, I kept quiet and listened. And I think anybody who tries to assert themselves at a young age in this profession, when guys like that are around, are really not very bright because they can help you. They can tell you things that you need to know that will stand you in good stead once you get the foot in the door and will carry forward over these many years. Bob Prince was he sat me down and gave me do's and don'ts when I came. About, you know, you can't give the score too much and a whole lot of other things. And Jack and Vin and Ernie Harwell were the same ways. Why they like me, I don't know. I'm still trying to figure that out, but they did. And as I said, and when I was called by Dale Petrosky, who at the time was president of the Baseball Hall of Fame, I'll never forget, Johnny Bench called me on the phone. He said, this is before social media, this is before cell phones. And Bench said, get a legal pad out and write down the name of everybody who you hear from because they're the people who give a damn about you. He said, the people you don't hear from either are jealous of what you've accomplished or they don't like you for whatever the reason. And so I did that, and I wrote down the names.
It's great advice.
Just tremendous advice. Even if you have a cell phone, it's a great piece of advice. Jack Buck was one of the first people within the 24 hours that I, when the announcement was made, he was one of the first people to call me. And the thing he said to me was, he said, you know how Jack was, the way he talked, he said, young man, he said, your life will never be the same again. And I said, well, why do you say that? He said, because every time your name is written, and it could be a century and a half from now, as long as there are descendants of Marty Brenneman, if it's written, it'll have Hall of Famer Marty Brenneman. He said, your life will never be the same again. And he was right. I was a big fan of Jack Buck. I was a huge fan.
What did you take away? I was going to ask you about all these different guys and picking away, you know, there's so many of these guys.
And there's a constant.
Yes. What is it?
You ain't lying. Incredible humility. The guys I named, none of them had incredible egos, or if they did, they were able to keep it to a minimum so as not to offend people. Vin was like that. Jack was like that. Ernie Harwell. All those guys, they had every right in the world to be egomaniacs. They were the best of the best. You'd never know it.
Mm-hmm.
Not from my perspective, they didn't. And I can get turned off right now by somebody that's got an ego that fills up a room.
Right.
Because I don't think any of us are more important in the game. There are guys in our profession who think they are. And that's too bad because they have never figured it out. But that's the one constant. That's a great question because I can go right down the line. The great ones are the guys that it's almost like a multimillionaire who walks around dressed up like a homeless person. They ain't trying to impress anybody.
Right.
And I don't think any of those guys ever tried to impress anybody. They were and are who they are. And God bless the soul of Jack and Ernie Harwell and all the great guys that have passed from our world, but that's the thing that most impressed me about all those guys.
That's Marty Brenneman. Hey, Cardinals Nation, meet Craver Nation at your nearest White Castle. My conversation with Marty Brenneman continues in just a moment.
Now, back to the Dave Sinclair Lincoln and Ford Sports Open Line on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
Welcome back to Inside Cardinals Nation. Hey, Cardinals Nation, meet Craver Nation at your nearest White Castle. We continue my conversation with Marty Brenneman.
What are you most proud of in your career? And we mentioned the Hall of Fame, the National Radio Hall of Fame. You're in multiple halls of fame. But what are you most proud of when you look back at your career?
I'm most proud of?
Yeah.
Quit smoking at 1990.
Good for you. How'd you do it?
It's a really funny story. Nobody smoked like I did. I mean, I know Jack could kill it.
I was going to say, Jack.
It might have been a photo finish. And, you know, and when Joe Nuxhall was alive, God rest his soul, he and I were together for 31 years, and we did a doubleheader. I promise you, we could knock off 4 packs of cigarettes.
I was going to say, a two-packers.
And I developed a polyp on my vocal cords. And so I went to an eye, ear, nose, and throat guy in Cincinnati, and he said, well, you got to take them off. He said, it's nothing serious. He said, but you've got them on both sides. And he said, we can't strip them, the medical term they used, at both of them at the same time. You got to have one done 1 month, and 30 days later, you get the other done. He said, it's not a big deal. So I did that. And he said, now, let me give you a piece of advice. I would recommend you quit smoking, because let me tell you what's going to happen if you don't. If you don't, you're going to develop lung cancer and die. You are going to develop cancer in your voice box, and we'll have to remove that, and you'll be healthy as a horse, but you'll never work again. Or the remote possibility is you dodge a bullet and never have a problem, or you can simplify matters by quitting. And he threw a business card across the table at me, and he said, now, before you look at that, I don't endorse that, but you might think about it. It was to a hypnotist. And I went to a woman. She charged me $180 for 3 appointments. And you went today, and you went tomorrow, and you went a week from tomorrow. She taped your first session. She put you under. And so I never forget it. I sat out in front of her office and smoked a cigarette in my car at 12:25 in an afternoon. And I went in, and she put me under. And they give you the – back then it was a cassette tape. They give it to you for reinforcement if you need to listen to it before you come back the next day. I went back the next day, and I said, I don't need to be here. And she said, what are you talking about? I said, I have not had a desire for a cigarette. She said, you listened to the tape? I said, I had not listened to 1 second of that tape. And I went through the second appointment, and I never went back to the third, and I never desired a cigarette for the rest of my life.
And you still haven't?
And I still haven't.
That's
and
amazing.
It was. Well, I'm convinced that I'd be walking around. I'd be out of this business, and I'd be walking around with a canister of oxygen on my hip.
Yeah.
I have pulmonary disease. because of the smoking, that it's I can live with. It's not a big deal, but I have an inhaler that I use twice a day. But there's nothing that I've accomplished in my business that's more important to me than that, because had I not done that, as I said, you and I would not be friends. You and I would not be sitting across from each other doing this right now. It wouldn't happen. And so I can't think of anything that I'm more proud of than that.
I didn't expect that answer.
I know. I didn't think you would.
Is that what you normally say when people ask you that, too?
I sure do.
It's incredible.
I'll tell you an interesting story. We have a feature on the air called, and we use it, it's a lighthearted thing. This is why this caught people's attention. We have a lighthearted feature every night called Ask Marty. And Jeff Brantley,
I can imagine.
And it can be about anything. Right. It can be about entertainment. It can be about books, because I read a lot. It can be about Broadway shows, because I'm a big fan. It can be about baseball. And the question, this was 2 years ago. If you have one fear in your life, what is it? I said, the biggest fear I have in my life is dropping dead in a hotel room by myself. And it offended some people. Some people got upset. And I said, I'm out of here. I said, that was not a lighthearted question. That was a serious question. And I answered it in as true a manner as I could answer it, because I remember when Richie Ashburn dropped dead in a hotel room in New York, when Don Drysdale died by himself in a hotel in Montreal, when Harry Callis dropped dead in a TV booth in Washington.
Yep.
I talked to him 2 days before he died. And so I'm fortunate now. I'm married to a younger woman. She travels with me almost all the time. And that was a major – I just cannot imagine. It scares me to think about dying in a hotel room with a heart attack or a stroke or whatever the case might be, and you die by yourself. People ask me a serious question, I give them a serious answer.
Well, you're also honest, and that's how you do the games.
I try. Yeah.
And people can call it critical, they can call it honesty, whatever. But you call the game the way that you see it, and you interject personality into it as well, which a lot of guys, young guys especially, you can't do that. Could you get away with it when you first started the way that you do now?
No.
Okay.
When I came here, Bob Housen was the president, general manager. Dick Wagner was his assistant. And they had a way, or I say they, Dick did. Dick had a way that he wanted me to do the game. And it was nothing short of being a cheerleader without referring to the Reds as we and the other team as us, which I did early. And then one of the most defining moments in my career, we had a pitcher back then named Jack Billingham, who he and his wife are dear friends of my wife and I now. We see him as much as we can, and I there's no bigger fan on earth as a person than I am for Jack Billingham. And they had just beaten the Atlanta Braves the night before. This is 1975 or 76, and they beat them like 25-7. It was one of those games like you guys played in Cincinnati when Brian Price had to run Clint Pennington out there in the ninth inning. And so I made the comment to Jack the next day. I said, boy, that was a great game we played last night. He said, we? He said, how many hits did you get? How many people did you get out? That was the last time. Never did it again. And my style evolved. It was a work in progress. It did not sit well with Dick Wagner. He and I went nose to nose all the time. And I asked to be let out of my contract at one point. He wouldn't do it. And when he told me that, I said, this was in the early 80s. I said, well, if you're not letting me out of my contract, then you're going to have to sit back and you're going to have to listen to me broadcast the games the way I want to broadcast them. And so my contract came up. I was in the last year of a deal, and I wanted things to calm down a little bit, and I wanted to renew because I didn't want to go anywhere else. And he said, I don't negotiate contracts during the season. I said, yes, you do. I said, I'll name you the players who's kind of you. He said, well, let me put it to you this way. I'm not negotiating yours. And I said, well, that's fine. I said, but if I'm not signed to a contract by the 15th of August, I'm going to call a news conference and tell them why. And he was fired on July the 11th.
Wow.
And I probably would not be here. The long-winded point of the matter is I work for people and have for a lot of years now that – probably cringe over some things I might say on the radio, but they let me do my job. The Castellini ownership's the best ownership I've been involved with, and if I didn't think that, I would not say it. I'm not sucking up to anybody. I truly believe that. They've been wonderful to me and my family. Bob was the reason why Tom is back here now when I didn't think he had a chance of getting out of Arizona, and he did. But there's a line that I don't cross. And I've had people say, well, define the line. I can't define it. I just think, and you know where it is. Any guy who's been around for a while intuitively knows where that line is without crossing it. And to define it, you can't do it. But I know where that line is. You know, the players are not big fans of mine, and I understand that. But I feel like if I'm going to praise you when you're playing well, then I reserve the right to be critical when you're not. It's a two-way street.
Mm-hmm.
And if I ever write a book, which I probably won't, but if I ever did, I would have a chapter of the top 10 favorite players of all time, and they were guys who understood that there was never a personal vendetta with me because I didn't like a particular player. And we're all no different in that regard. There are players that we don't like and we would never see again if we had a choice. But you can't allow that to enter into your broadcast. You've got to be as objective as you can. They allow me to do my job, and for that reason, I've been very, very fortunate. I know guys in our business that have to measure every word that comes out of their mouth for fear of reprisal from upstairs, and thank God I don't have that problem.
That's Marty Brenneman. Hey, Cardinals Nation, meet Craver Nation at your nearest White Castle. My conversation with Marty Brenneman continues in just a moment.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends.
The Dave Sinclair, Lincoln and Ford Sports Open Line continues on KMOX.
Welcome back to Inside Cardinals Nation. Hey, Cardinals Nation, meet Craver Nation at your nearest White Castle. We continue my conversation with Marty Brenneman. Who did you like to call good, bad, indifferent, but when they were here, you liked being around that person or at least watching them play the game of baseball?
Well, I mean, my two best friends in this game are Pete Rose and Joe Morgan. They're the two guys that I was close to when they played. We've maintained a wonderful relationship. And especially with Pete, with all of the ups and downs, most of which he brought on himself. I truly have a great love for both of those guys. In fact, it's such, and I think when you get older, you get a little bit more, for want of a better term, mushy. But there's rarely a time when we talk to each other, the last thing we say to each other is, I love you. And I mean it that way. But we have guys that you know, I throw a name out there. Danny Graves, who was a relief pitcher mm-hmm. for us. Tremendous respect for him. See him today, and he's going to do some games with me on the radio this season here in Cincinnati. Should be in the Reds Hall of Fame, and I'm sure he will be one day. There are a lot of guys. Sean Casey and I had a great relationship. One of the great ones, and that's a great story, in 1999, they had a great team here. I mean, there was nothing they didn't have. That maybe the pitching could have been better, but offensively they were a powerhouse. And it was led by a guy by the name of Greg Vaughn, an outfielder.
Yeah.
He had 16.
Wound up being in St. Louis too for a little brief time. Yeah,
he had 16 home runs in the month of September and carried this team.
I remember.
And he was the kind of intimidating guy who, if you didn't perform, you didn't run out of ground ball, he would undress you verbally in the dugout in front of everybody else. And guys were intimidated by him. They played hard because they were scared of him. And he could back it up. If you wanted to carry it to another level, he would do that too. I didn't like him. He was gruff. And I've learned a long time ago, I don't have time. Life's too short for me now to be worried about guys that are trying to call their favor. But he was a sensational player. He was here 1 year. So years go by, and we don't see each other. And I get a call from a buddy of mine, an attorney in Sacramento, who I met through Dusty Baker when Dusty was managing here, who became a very dear friend of mine, very successful lawyer. He called me one night 2 years ago and said, Greg Vaughn is going into the Reds Hall of Fame. I mean, to the Sacramento Sports Hall of Fame. And I know, because I've often said, of all the players I've ever been around, he's the greatest single leader I've ever been around.
Really?
Oh, hands.
Even to the Big Red Machine guys?
Absolutely. The guy was something. He was just, really? Oh, my God. Why this club has never hired him, and I've tried and tried and tried to get them to hire him because he can teach young players so much. So he said, would you say that on tape, and I can play it at the banquet? He said, there are going to be 1,500 people. I said, yeah, I'd be happy to. So I did. A week later, this guy, Joe Babich, calls me back, and he said, your comments brought Greg Vaughn to tears.
Wow.
He said, he wants to call you. And so he called me, and we talked for an hour. And he said, you know, I never knew that you felt the way you felt about me. I said, well, I can tell you why. And he said, why? I said, because I didn't like you very much. And out of that has grown an incredible friendship.
That's great.
It's unbelievable. I get such a kick out of seeing guys that played, you know, way back. We go into St. Louis, and I'm going to bring up a name. I don't know whether he's even still alive today, Kenny Reitz.
Oh, yeah, Kenny's still alive. Yeah.
And it would put a smile on my face because I love those players back in the 70s and the 80s and in the 90s. And when I see guys like that I haven't seen for a long time, it's just a big, big kick for me.
Well, Kenny goes up to Mike Schmidt. I see Kenny at the ballpark all the time, and he always goes up to Mike Schmidt and says, how do my gold gloves look on your mantle?
That's a good line.
Pretty good.
That's a great line.
Couple more questions for you, Marty, and thanks for doing this.
No problem, Dan.
Favorite call? You know, you're part of some great calls with college basketball, certainly memorable moments there. You think about the Big Red Machine, the Hall of Fame guys that you dealt with, Tom Browning's perfect game.
Yeah.
I mean, there's limitless amount of great calls. What's your favorite? And it may be not a famous call, maybe it's something that's special to you.
In basketball, I did the Leitner.
Exactly. That's where I thought you were going to go.
That was a good one. And you know, when you have calls like that, and it's the same on television, whether it's on radio, if you know it's coming, I've never been one to plan what I'm going to say because I'm not good enough to make it sound uncontrived. I would say it, and it would say, had it written down on a piece of paper.
That's how I do it, too.
I can't do that. I've got to suck up the emotion of the moment and convey it in the best way I can. I tell you, one of them, it took place at Busch Stadium when Ken Griffey Jr. hit his 500th home run off Jack Morris.
That's right.
I mean, it was not Jack Morris of what's his name? The right-handed pitcher that was so good.
Matt Morris. Yeah.
And Ken Sr. was there.
Right. And his son.
And I thought it was a heck of a good call. And then I did his 600th home run. Here at our ballpark in Cincinnati, when Jay Bruce hit a home run in the bottom of the ninth inning.
Won a division title,
yes.
Right? Yes. Yeah.
That was that for me. And you know what? If you have a great call and all you pray is that you don't fumble over your words.
Yep.
And it comes out clean and because you know you're going to hear it ad nauseum for the rest of your life.
Right.
And so every time you hear it, if you screw it up, you just grit your teeth and just think, I had to do a better job. But, that, you know, they were some of the Tom Seaver's only no-hitter. That was against the Cardinals.
Yep.
George Hendricks hit a ground ball. I'll never forget to Danny Dreesen at first base to wrap it up. But I think anybody that's been around as long as I have, we all have one thing in common, and that is we all have a lot of memorable moments, whether it's team or whether it's individual, and we all have to live with the way it comes out because we can't change it.
Because of your friendship with Pete Rose, is it tough not to see him in the Hall of Fame?
Yeah, it is, and it's hard for me to understand. If you go to Cooperstown, and I was there last fall, I took three of my college fraternity brothers up there with their wives, and
that's
we
great.
Had the red carpet rolled out for us. It was wonderful. But you can't turn around in there without seeing some mention of Pete. Or
exactly.
Some, and my feeling is this. If they're going to use him to promote the great game of baseball, then why won't they let him in? I understand that he broke the cardinal rule about gambling. You know, we're in the most forgiving country in the world. We forgave a president for having sex in the White House. I'll go to my grave wondering how in the world he can't be in there, but he's not in there. And unfortunately, I don't think that's ever going to change.
When you look at the game today, two questions left for you. You could be commissioner for a day. What would you change about the game of baseball?
Oh, I change a lot. I'd get rid of all the rules that they've implemented.
Is that right?
Oh, yeah. I'd get rid of that second base rule. I'd get rid of that home plate collision rule.
I'm with you.
I would get rid of everything because I don't think it's as good a game to watch today as it was back in the 70s and 80s and 90s. There has to be a better way of doing things than to implement rules, and most of the rules that they've implemented have been knee-jerk reactions to a single play, the Chase Utley play in the postseason,
sure.
The Buster Posey play. They were knee-jerk decisions. Now, and I understand to some extent why, because we're talking about the incredibly ridiculous amount of money that's being paid to players, and we have to keep those players healthy and on the field. I understand that. I just don't think it's as good a game as it used to be.
What's left for Marty Brenneman to accomplish?
You know what? From a career standpoint, there's nothing really that I desire that I haven't done. I've got 3 World Series rings. If I don't get another one, I know a lot of guys in our business have never gotten one. So I don't really think there's a whole lot. As I mentioned earlier, I'm married to a young woman who keeps me going. It'd be very easy for me to sit on my butt not doing anything, but she will not allow me to do that. And there are places I want to go and things I want to do, and I want to be able to be healthy enough to do those. So I don't think I'm going to be around too much longer.
Well, that's not good news for all of us that like to listen to you.
Yeah. The one thing that – and this is another thing. I've done a very unscientific poll over a lot of years, and I ask guys in our business, and I ask guys in the business world, when you are retired,
right?
What do you miss the most about your job? In our business, I've not had one person say to me, not one, I miss the games. Everybody misses the people, and that would be there's no question in my mind. I would miss the people more than anything. And I'm not knocking the game, but if when I retire, there's a good chance I may never go to another Major League Baseball game again. It's got nothing to do with my lack of love for the game. I love the game. Nobody loves the game like I do. But I just think there's a time when you turn the page. I know Vin Scully went to maybe 3 or 4 or 5 games last year, his first year completely out of the game. And I would deathly miss the people. I really would. I think the guys that we have in our profession, for the most part, and there's always some, but I think the majority of guys that I deal with on a night-in, night-out basis, whether it be from the Cardinals or be from the Giants or whoever it might be, are good people. And at the end of the day, I don't give a damn whether they're a good broadcaster or not. They have to be, otherwise they wouldn't have a job. But if they're good people, then they're fine by me. I mean, that's the most important thing in the world to me.
You're the best, Marty. Thanks.
Thank you, pal. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
You bet. Many thanks to listening in to my conversation with the Hall of Famer, Marty Brenneman. A reminder, this has been brought to you by White Castle. Hey, Cardinals Nation, meet Craver Nation at your nearest White Castle. Special thanks to Marty, also to executive sports producer at KMOX, Ben Boyd. I'm Dan McLaughlin. We'll talk to you next time on Inside Cardinals Nation.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.